This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Settling in a new city can raise lots of questions. How does the bus service work? Can I join the local library? Where do I go to get advice on renting a home? Over the next half hour, Diane and the team from Citizens Advice Bureau bring you information of special interest to new migrants to Dunedin. Welcome to Settlement Information with Citizens Advice Bureau.
Kia ora koutou, nau mai, anō, welcome back to Citizens Advice Bureau o Te Pōri Dunedin Monthly Resettling in Aotearoa Show. Ko Anna Tukuingoa, I'm Anna, manager here at CAB, and back with us this evening is Garth Sheenan, the Ethnic Liaison Officer with New Zealand Police. Tēnā koe, Garth.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
We're going to continue our kōrero about safety in the home and the community. And so, firstly, we thought we'd chat about noise. So, noise is something that comes up often in neighbourhoods. This is something that the police are generally not responsible for, but the Dunedin City Council is. And there'll always be a certain level of noise in a neighbourhood, like motor mowers, building work, barking dogs, rowdy children, loud party music. But if you believe that the amount of noise coming from your neighbours is excessive, the first thing is to try and talk to them about it. So excessive noise is something that's under human control and unreasonably interferes with your peace, comfort and convenience. And what a noise control officer at the DCC thinks is excessive depends on the time of day. Like party music might not be excessive at 9, but after 10 or 11 it might be. And you might be able to come to an agreement with your neighbour, but if you can't, you have to ring the DCC on 477 4000, and they are there 24 hours, the noise control people. And sometimes you might be asked to call back in 30 minutes just to confirm the noise is still happening. And there's more information on that on the DCC website, dunedin.govt.nz, under services noise control. But Garth, tell us, what situations might the police be involved in regarding noise?
Yeah, you're right. It is a bit of a council issue, but we tend to jump in if there's going to be any threat or any sort of potential violence towards the security team that will be sort of utilised to shut the noise down. The DCC will organise someone to do that. Now, let's say, for instance, a party that has numbers upwards of 50 to 100 people. It's not safe for someone to go in there by themselves, so police will generally just be there as a body in case anything does go bad or just to deter anything from going astray. But Anna, you're right, you just need to contact the local DCC, put that report in first, and if it warrants us, then they'll let us know.
Yep, great. Yeah. So another situation that might arise, which has come up with us before actually, is if your neighbour has installed a security camera that points directly into your home. So again, always best, and this might not, you know, you might have already fallen out with them, but it is always best to start talking to your neighbour, you know, about your concerns, because they may not even know, you know, and most neighbourhood problems can actually be resolved if everyone's calm and reasoned or reasonable. But your neighbour may not realise that the camera is aimed in your home, and it might just be a fake camera actually just to deter people. And personal use of a CCTV camera is generally not covered by the Privacy Act. But the Crimes Act might apply if someone is making intimate visual recording, mightn't it, without your knowledge. And in this case, it can be reported to the police. Is that correct?
Yes, certainly. If you have concerns over the angle or the projection of someone's CCTV or security camera, then by all means, you can let us know. We do a door knock and we'll have a look at just exactly where it's targeted. A lot of the time, these cameras should only be pointed to public spaces or down their driveway and shouldn't be directly towards neighbouring properties. Mm. So, yeah, if that's the case or concern, then just let us know and we can send one of our community staff around to have a wee chat and just make sure that is the case.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah.
So, road safety is a key part of safety around homes and communities, and the police patrol our roads. But there are four main behaviours which contribute to death and injury on our roads. So firstly, I guess, what are the road rules around seat belts? Who should be wearing them? Who's responsible for making sure their passengers have them on? And, you know, what are the restraints for babies and children?
Yes, if we start off, to answer your question, everyone who is in the vehicle, there should be a seatbelt for each person individually. So if there's more people than seatbelts, you've got too many people in the car. But the people who are responsible, if you're under the age, or you're not a guardian or a child of a parent, if you're under the age of 18, the driver is responsible for making sure you guys are wearing your seatbelts. Anyone over that age becomes liable for any fines. In terms of babies and children, if you go to the Plunkett or jump onto the Plunkett website, they'll give you a bit of a list on, I think it's done by height, on when you can upgrade from a car seat or a baby seat all the way through to a booster seat.
Yeah.
The younger you are, you will still need some support and being restrained properly in a seatbelt. You know, it's not just sufficient. You might need some other means. Mm. Yeah.
But you can, Plunkett, you're right, are the ones that manage all that, and they, you can hire them off them, can't you, the baby ones and the boosters? Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll let you know when the kids are appropriately aged to go on to the next level. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the rules around driving under the influence of drugs and alcohol? And also, I guess, what's the police advice on driving and fatigue?
Police advice in and around drugs and alcohol would be don't drink and drive, or don't take drugs and drive. We will breath test you at whenever police will pull you over, or if we've got roads, alcohol stops. So there is a limit, but I'm not going to go too far into that because it varies on your body composition as well. But it can go all the way up to being having your car taken off you and your license suspended, all the way down to a warning or a fine. And again, with the drugs, if you're under the influence of any drugs, it impacts your ability to control that vehicle. And it's not just you on the road. So it's not just you that's unsafe. It's other people on the streets. Mm. I guess a similar theme with the fatigue. If you feel like you're not enough or you're feeling tired, give yourself a break. If you're on a long journey, it's going to be beneficial for you just to pull over and have, you know, half an hour sleep or an hour sleep and then get back on rather than trying to get home and not making it.
So police can
also test you if they believe that you are fatigued as well, and they can inhibit you or stop you from driving for a period of up to 12 hours if they believe that's the case.
Yeah. And if anyone sees anyone else driving erratically, they should tell the police, shouldn't they?
Exactly, yeah. Yep. We get a lot of reports come through with improper driving. People could be numerous things. Yeah.
And what's that number?
So 105. You go straight through. So I would choose 111 if it's happening at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, always go 111 if it's happening, because then police can act accordingly. Get a unit out to find them, and we're quite successful in doing that and getting
in
results
real time.
For the real time. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so being distracted is one of the main factors leading to death and injury on the roads, and I suppose that's shot up since cell phones. But what are these distractions and the rules around, you know, cell phone driving?
Yeah, distractions are anything that takes your eyes off the road, really. Our biggest one is cell phones. I think it accumulated to about 5% of our fatalities in the Southern District, so... You know, it's distractions, things that are easily avoided. And look, although it's not going to lead into a prosecution or anything, but if you're putting makeup on or even drinking or having, you know, a hot drink, these are all things that may result in you taking your eyes off the road. So just be a bit careful about that, because the police will pull you over and remind you about safety rules. But if you're on your cell phone, it's a non-compliance, so you get a fine.
Straight away,
Do too many of them, and you can lose your license as well.
Mm. Yeah, so really, it's just important to not risk your safety by being careless and complacent.
That's exactly right. Yeah, just drive. If you're driving, just stick to driving.
Yeah. Okay. So, what is the advice for parents, whānau, caregivers, in regards to children in the road, especially like around schools? You know, that's quite an issue, isn't it? The safety around getting to and from school, whether they're walking or being dropped off.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because we do have heavily reduced speed limits around our schools, particularly during those pick-up and drop-offs, because even though there tends to be a pedestrian crossing and the schools tend to use them, it doesn't take much for it to run out between a couple of cars. So just stick to those even though you're dropping from a 50 to a 20, you know, just make sure you are eyes on the road as well when you are going around them. And a bit of road safety on the reverse is just getting your kids to make sure that they do cross at the crossings where the school have them provided. That gives them the best chance of protection if that's the case, yeah.
And also it's a good idea to tell your kids, if they're going on their own, the best route, isn't it, to take?
Yeah, best route to take, again, very similar to the most popular ones. We'll get onto the main street as soon as you can because you tend to get a lot more foot traffic there.
Yep.
The streets tend to be a wee bit busy, but it's about that safety in numbers as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're less likely to try run across the road by yourself. But if you're in a group of, if you're in a group of people, you're less likely to run across the road.
Yeah.
Because you just want to stick with the main bunch here.
Yeah. So there's a lot to know about online and identity safety. The internet is obviously an important source of information and means of social interaction for children, young people and adults. But it pays to keep in mind that it can also present a lot of dangers, fraud, scams, bullying and abuse. Your best defence is to be aware that scams exist and to take some precautions. Take care who you give your personal information to. Beware of any requests for money. Never send money or give credit card details or copies of personal documents. And that includes sharing personal information on social media sites. Someone can always use your information to steal your identity, which is the thing that you don't want to happen. And always do research on, you know, to make sure that you're actually dealing with someone reputable. So we're going to tell you why it's so important to be careful with your personal information, and then we're going to hear from Garth regarding the situations when the police might be involved. So if you don't take enough precautions with your personal information, you increase your risk that someone dishonor or use it to steal your identity. And this is called identity theft. When someone has your identity information, they can do things like, for example, they could take a loan or a credit card in your name, and then you'd be left with paying it back or a bad credit history. People can use you to avoid punishment for their own driving offences. Again, you'd end up being liable for them. They can apply for and collect benefits with your identity that you might be entitled to. They can sign up for a vehicle loan or equipment hire service or the public library, all under your name, and you'll end up getting all the penalties for it if you're late or you don't pay or things like that. So what situations would the police be involved here?
We would get involved with initially any of these. However, how far the investigation will go depend on the evidence we have to support anything, as well as the cost. I know it sounds a bit silly, but if you are a victim of, let's say, a marketplace where you bought a laptop or a cell phone for $500, police wouldn't probably look at you. It's a buyer beware sort of market. So you do have to protect yourself when dealing online in particular. Police will take a report, no problem at all. And if it's linked to a tirade of, you know, 30 or 40 other incidences with the same person, you might be lucky where the police will come back to your file. Always do report it. And then it's up to the investigating team to push that envelope if it needs to go any further. But the amount of this sort of incidences and reporting is colossal. That there's just the resources for the police just not available to be looking at anyone at an individual case. So, yeah, protect yourself by just maybe getting someone else to go over what you're going to do before you click yes. A clear set of eyes is always helpful, and you never give up your details. And if you're ever concerned, just do come in and say, hey, this is what you've done. And we'll give you some advice as well over the counter or through the 10-5 line as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's something we could help people with too, like, you know, just putting them in the right direction of, you know, if you got your FPOS or you lose your credit card or something, you've always got to tell your provider as soon as possible. Same with if you lose your passport, you'd report it, but you've also got to tell the passport office, you know, to cancel it. You've got to remember to cancel things, don't you?
Yeah.
Same with your driver's license. Always report it to you, but also Waka Kotahi, you know, need to know as soon as possible.
Need to know. Anyone that's responsible for that sort of ID should be notified as soon as you know. Don't second guess yourself and try look for it and take a couple of days doing that. Just cancel it straight away.
Yeah. And some other good advice is never be pressured into making hasty decisions because, you know, that's how scammers try to scam you, by getting you to really act quickly, and they'll freak you out and say something's happened if you don't do this by a certain time, and you go, oh my God, what's happening, and you do something stupid. Whether it's about investing, purchasing or donating, you know, they might say a product is so popular they're running out of stock, for instance, but or that service is only available if you sign up straight away. So that leads us to how do people practice good computer security?
First one would be the use of passwords. Someone has to, you know, sort of guess. I mean, if they're passwords that are easy to guess, like your birthday or your name, then, you know, it won't take them too many options to get in there. So choose something that's going to stand the test of time, make it easier for you. And you can use different passwords for different things. Don't stay to the same password, which a lot of people find easier to remember. But it's also easier for someone else to then get access to all your information and your accounts. And just keep your computer software up to date, whether it's a monthly scan or something like that. Make sure you're not picking up any bugs or clicking on sites that will put viruses onto your computer. Be a bit savvy around looking after your computer, and it'll look after you.
Yeah. And same with suspicious emails coming in. You know, there's a few things you need to be aware of there, isn't there?
So, for instance, if you're receiving an email from an organization that you know and trust, for instance, let's say eBay or something, make sure that it's addressed correctly to you. What you find most scammers will do is they'll use your username, and that's not the name you sign up in. So just be a bit cautious about how it's addressed, and if you can, click on the box that's sent it to you, and you'll be surprised at where that email actually has come from. Set up to look like a proper one, or give them a phone call beforehand and say, I've received this email. They might tell you that it wasn't from them, and you know it's a no-go.
Yeah, I find that the email address of the sender, actually, if you look at that, it's usually pretty quickly clear that it's not from a legit source. And legit businesses will never send you an email with a link either.
Click on a link. The grammar and the makeup of the email, you know, it might look really good on the face, but once you start reading it and you're like, oh, that's not how it should read, those are red flags straight away. So just back out of that one and don't click on anything further.
Yeah, and if you want to go to that company's website, just go and put it in, type it in yourself rather than clicking through any links that you've been sent. And so why should people check their financial records regularly?
Because, as you previously mentioned, you might have given some details unexpectedly, and all of a sudden you're getting billed for several things that you have no idea you've been billed for. And that's an indication that somewhere along the line someone has obtained your details. And so police can successfully go back and make sure that someone could be held accountable for those. But it also allows you to answer those questions that hurt, you know, why is this money coming out of my account? How did it start? And hopefully you'll be able to find out how you tripped up, or, you know, someone got those details quite easily and have started to, like you say, get a bank loan out or get a loan out, a car loan, and all that sort of stuff that happens when identity theft takes place.
There is an article on our website, www.cab.org.nz, about how to check my credit record and how much it costs. So if you're interested in having a look at that, listeners,
that's also another thing. A lot of these people, if they do get enough information, they will apply for loans and might not get them. But at least in New Zealand, we will let you know if someone has tried to take out a loan using your details. So there might be something as well. If you are a victim of some strange transactions, then maybe do a credit check on yourself as well to make sure that no one's tried to do anything like that.
There's a couple of other websites, consumerprotection.govt.nz, cert.govt.nz. They have a lot of information about common threats, and business.govt.nz, they have info about protecting your business risks and cybersecurity. And then there's also netsafe.org.nz, which gives a lot of advice and is a great place for further information about safety online. Now, we mentioned before about trading, you know, like online platforms like Marketplace. Again, trust your instincts. If the deal looks too good to be true, it probably is. And we sort of covered already, you know, if people are in trade, then you're covered by the Consumer Guarantees Act. But if it's just like Marketplace, you're not covered by the Consumer Guarantees Act. It's just a private sale when you've really got very little protection. So you're better to only, if you want something on Marketplace or something like that, it's better just to pay in cash when you pick up. Don't deposit the money beforehand. Yeah, anything else you want to add there?
If you are buying through a platform like Trade Me or eBay, stick to that platform. If someone wants to divert you to an email-only correspondence, that's a red flag as well. So you're protected under those platforms as well. So as they've been mentioned, that's a common theme where we find people started talking to someone and then gone into an email-only contact, and before you know it, you're not protected by Trade Me or eBay, and you're in the hole several thousand dollars.
Yeah, exactly. And if they've got their own answer and question place, it's better to do it through that, platform. Yeah. So what about your mobile phone and other devices? There's a few things people could just quickly, we could zoom through that, how the people might.
Yeah, they're always changing cell phones. You go from, you can have a thumbprint to a face to a PIN code to six digits. Look, to protect your phone, it would be not giving your password away to anyone not allowing them to have that access. They're actually pretty tricky to get into if they're found. Police even struggle to open phones when they're lost and found. So always be cautious if you are doing any transactions online that no one's looking over your shoulder for any of those details or those key points. Software on your phone as well. You could probably store a whole lot of, your information, or your passwords or ID and stuff. Yeah, too, in a vault or something on an app.
Cool. And so children online, really, you just have to make sure you know who your kids are talking to. That they're actual friends, not, you know, there might be some weirdo overseas and pretending to be someone young. So it's really important to talk to your kids about that, isn't it?
Definitely, 100%.
Yeah. Okay, so just quickly before we wind up for the evening, how does someone, again, contact the police and how do they report an incident?
We've got 111 for an emergency, so if it's happening now. If you want to report something that has happened, 10-5. You also can do an online report, or you can go into any one of the stations.
Yeah. And again, if people want to contact you, they can just walk into the Dunedin station or ring up and ask to speak to the Otago Coastal Ethnic Liaison Officer.
Yeah, that's correct. And I can be the bridge between you and a report. So no problem.
Yeah, cool. All right. So ngā mihi nui, Garth, for being our guest and sharing your knowledge of community safety with us. Thank you to our listeners, Tiger Access Radio, and Jeff for hosting us this evening. Remember that Citizens Advice Bureau is here. We've got a website, www.cab.org.nz, that's got heaps of articles about everything we've covered and thousands of other things about your rights. You can call us 471 6166 in Dunedin or 0800 367 222. You can follow us on Facebook. We've also got Instagram. Thanks, Jeff, Garth. Noho ora mai, stay well, mā te wā.
Thank you. See you later.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.